This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ihayis Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The possible aggravating factors are mainly the internal displacement of population due to insecurity and reduced access to livelihoods. And then there are the reduced access to healthcare and nutrition services, mainly in the area where health facilities are closed.
That's a nutrition specialist for UNICEF on the rising number of malnourished children in Burkina Faso. Details coming up also. A 3-month state of emergency has been declared in Sudan. And South Africans are mourning the death of anti-apartheid activist George Bizos. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Zimbabweans in South Africa have criticized a delegation from the ruling African National Congress for failing to confront Zimbabwe's ZANU-PF party about ongoing human rights abuses and suppression of dissent. A communique issued by the two parties revealed there was no direct discussion or resolution on that issue, even though President Cyril Ramaphosa had told South Africans that the delegation's second trip to Zimbabwe would get more facts on the situation and engage all parties. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Angry, disappointed, emotional, and taken for granted. These are the words that many Zimbabweans used to describe their disappointment that the ANC delegation failed again in efforts to get a full picture on the troubling situation in the neighboring Zimbabwe. This is what Ramaphosa said when he announced his party's resolution to send a delegation to Zimbabwe and why it was necessary to intervene in the crisis.
We are having to deal with a situation on our borders. We are continuing to feel them on our border, and it's important that as neighbors we're able to discuss these types of matters so that we see the extent to which we can be supportive of one another in whatever shape or form.
However, after the ANC delegation and ZANU-PF met yesterday, an 11-point communique shows no specific discussion on the human rights crisis. ANC delegation leader Ace Magashule avoided media questions on what was discussed and agreed on the human rights crisis. As was the case when Ramaphosa's envoys were sent last month on the same agenda, they left Harare without engaging any other party or civil society organizations. Mxolisi Ncube, spokesperson of the newly formed the Patriotic Front Party, says the ANC clearly lied to the world that it was sending a delegation to resolve the Zimbabwean crisis.
I am disappointed at what has turned out to be brotherly love between ZANU-PF and the ANC, because I'm one of the Zimbabweans who had hoped that at long last South Africa had realized that the people of Zimbabwe need assistance, especially in calling ZANU-PF to order, especially on the human rights abuses that are still going on in the country.
Crispin Nyoni, a member of another Zimbabwean political party, Mthwakazi Liberation Front, said ANC and the ZANU-PF have stretched the patience of Zimbabweans to the limit.
If a dog is cornered, it has no any other way of getting out of the corner. But it finally comes direct to the one who has cornered it, and it attacks.
However, Zimbabwean academic Bongani Nyati says it is likely that the media got a diluted version of closed-door discussions that may have taken a much tougher tone.
The display of solidarity is just a diplomatic facade for the two liberation movements, but behind closed doors where the really talking take place, we should expect that the ANC did sternly raise warnings against ZANU-PF.
The ANC delegation says it will go back to Zimbabwe to engage other parties. But many Zimbabweans say that will be a futile exercise since it has lost all credibility. they are now demanding an African Union delegation to go instead. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The United Nations Children's Fund says child hunger is getting worse in Burkina Faso, with more than 535,000 kids under age 5 suffering from acute malnutrition on an unprecedented level. Mavis Ochera in Ghana has more.
Some 156,500 children are classified as severely malnourished, leaving them 9 times more likely to die than well-nourished children, according to UNICEF. Burkina Faso, a landlocked country in West Africa, has more than 1 million internally displaced persons, 60% of them children, and 3.3 million suffer from acute food insecurity. Nidia Trace Kaburite, nutrition specialist for UNICEF based in Burkina Faso, says the recent rapid nutrition survey for July to August showed that most severely or acute malnourished children were in municipalities hosting the highest numbers of displaced people. She says the town of Groom in the Sahel region and the Baselogo site for internally displaced persons in the center Tono region were worst affected. She says children become the first victims of the situation, and the lack of access to education and health protection should not become their new normal. Kaburite says most children under 5 in the region were at higher danger of death if their situation doesn't improve, noting that the area where the cases were recorded suffered from high insecurity.
The possible aggravating factors are mainly the internal displacement of population due to insecurity and reduced access to livelihoods. And then there are the reduced access to healthcare and nutrition services, mainly in the area where health facilities are closed.
COVID-19 worsened the situation, she says, calling for intensified efforts to ensure the continuity of nutrition services to prevent and treat malnutrition for children in urgent need.
The reduction of attendance of health and nutrition services, both at health and community level, the reduction of quality of care was not noticed. Also, limitation of movement from one region to another, as well as closure of borders, could lead to a disruption of food supply and demand, which in turn may cause food prices to increase and food insecurity levels to be increased.
Kaburite says UNICEF and its partners are supporting the government with a focus on promotion of appropriate infant-related feeding practices, prevention of micronutrient deficiency, treatment of malnutrition, and delivery of therapeutic foods such as milk. She says about 737 tons of therapeutic food have been delivered to health facilities, and 51,685 children with severe acute malnutrition have been treated since January. But she says UNICEF has a $96 million funding gap in Burkina Faso. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Ochery in Ghana.
South Africans are mourning the death of anti-apartheid activist and attorney George Bizos, who served as a defense lawyer for South African icon Nelson Mandela. Bizos' family says the Greek-born lawyer, who came to South Africa as a refugee during World War II, died of natural causes yesterday. He was 92. President Cyril Ramaphosa described Bizos as the legal eagle of our country. Bizos defended Mandela and others in the so-called Rivonia trial in the 1960s. The defendants all were sentenced to long prison terms for their roles in fighting the racist apartheid system. After Mandela was released from prison and elected the nation's first black president, Bizos helped craft one of the world's most progressive constitutions. Cameroon's military this week launched an operation to weed out Anglophone separatists in the northwestern city of Bamenda. Locals say the commercial hub is eerily quiet after the military banned motorcycles and rebels responded by demanding all vehicles stay off the streets. Civilians have been escaping the renewed fighting to neighboring towns and villages, as Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
27-year-old nurse Rachel Ngobisin arrived in Yaoundé late Wednesday after escaping heavy fighting in Cameroon's northwestern city of Bamenda.
I struggled and I trekked for a very long distance before I could find a car that could smuggle me out of Bamenda. Worst of all, when I finally got a car, I had to pay 5 times the normal price because even the driver is scared, he's taking a risk.
The fighting broke out as Cameroon's military this week swept the city of about 350,000 people looking for Anglophone separatists. The commander of troops in the northwest region, General Carvalet, Monday, announced what he called Operation Clean Bamenda. He said they aimed to weed out rebels who entered the city after the military on Sunday killed a self-proclaimed rebel general.
That terrorist by name Fonte, alias Madop, has killed more than 100 people. We are taking all the measures to make sure that Bamenda will be clean. Respect the decision taken by the city mayor of Bamenda and the city authorities.
In a Wednesday interview, Valer said there were several running battles between the military and rebels in Bamenda and nearby villages. However, in Bamenda, locals say the streets are eerily quiet and movement in the city has become difficult. Officials banned motorcycles to stop the rebels from being able to quickly attack and escape. Cameroon authorities say normally, commercial motorcyclists alone number about 25,000 in Bamenda. Separatists responded by demanding all vehicles stay off the city's streets. Daniel Kapo is a Hong Kong-based self-proclaimed deputy defense chief for the rebel Ambazonia Defense Forces. Speaking via a messaging application, he says they announced the demand to support motorcyclists.
Our citizens are relying on motorbikes to go to hospital and to provide access to critical areas of Bamenda. Most of these motorbikers end their livings only providing these services and cater for a large population of our people who have no jobs to make a living. We cannot allow this. We have to rise up in solidarity with the bike men and also to send a strong message to the occupying force and the occupying administration.
Cameroon's military has vowed to crush rebels who refuse to surrender and hand over their weapons. The governor of the Northwest region, Deben Chofo, says people should respect security actions needed to make the city safe.
Ces mesures seront d'application obligatoire.
He says measures taken by the government and the military to protect civilians should be respected. The announced actions and many others that have not been made public, says Chofo, are intended to ensure the safety and well-being of all civilians. He asks that all civilians continue carrying out their daily activities without fear. The rebels have been fighting since 2017 to carve out an independent English-speaking state from French-speaking majority Cameroon. The United Nations says the 4-year conflict has left at least 3,000 people dead and displaced more than 500,000. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Facing questions at home and pressure from abroad, Mali's military junta launched a 3-day national consultation today over its plans for returning the country to civilian rule. Around 500 people from various political parties, unions, and NGOs are due to attend the forum in the capital, Bamako. It's the second round of discussions between the young officers who overthrew President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita on August 18th and civilian representatives, many of whom had campaigned fiercely for him to resign. Early jubilation among many Malians over Keita's exit has been superseded by questions and divisions about the speed of the handover and the military's role in the transition period. The junta initially talked of a 3-year transition, but the 50-nation regional bloc ECOWAS wants it no more than 12 months. Mali's neighbors are watching with concern, fearing the country could spiral back into chaos, a scenario that 8 years ago helped fuel the jihadist revolt, which now rattles Niger and Burkina Faso. The Zimbabwe government has ordered a halt to coal mining in Hwange National Park by a Chinese company. Conservationists and wildlife management groups had launched a court challenge against the company's operating license. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Minister of Information and Publicity Monica Mchangu announced immediate halt to the mining operations. The park is home to one of Africa's largest elephant heads. A statement did not give a reason, but environmentalists, tourism sector players and concerned citizens had questioned the wisdom of awarding the mining license in the first place. The Minister of Mines and Mining Development granted the permit to the Zimbabwe Zhongjing Mining Group Tong Mao Coal Company in February 2019. On Monday, the Zimbabwe Environmental Lawyers Association filed an urgent court application seeking to stop the mining activity, arguing that creating a coal mine in the park would cause devastating ecological degradation and force wildlife to flee. They said mining would cause a decline in tourism, adversely affecting the incomes of local residents who depend on the national park and further exacerbating human-wildlife conflict. Tinashe Chisaira, an environmental lawyer with Advocates for Earth, an advocacy group, says it's baffling how the mining license was awarded given the current law.
Zimbabwean law is very clear that there are specific areas that have been set aside for the conservation and preservation of animals. Our laws are very specific that for a special grant to be granted, it should be done in the national interest. This is part of the Mines and Minerals Act. There is definitely no national interest in opening up a wildlife conservation areas for private coal mining purposes.
Chisaira says the encroachment of human activities into the parks already has destabilized animals in their natural habitat. Hwange is estimated to hold over 45,000 elephants, along with 400 bird and over 100 mammal species such as lions, buffaloes, rhinos and cheetahs. The mine is slated to span 105 square kilometers, according to court papers. The mining initiative is among several projects which the Zimbabwe government reportedly has with Chinese entities in the energy sector.
If there had not been noise, you know, made by various concerned individuals and organizations, this type of mining activities would have continued. So, as organizations, as Advocates for Earth and other organizations, we are going to carry on with the campaign against coal mining in our national parks until the law is changed to reflect that national parks should really just be for conservation.
Chisaira and others say the mining law has loopholes which have been exploited to grant permits which endanger the ecology in national parks and affect other sectors of the economy, such as tourism. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo. In Bulawayo.
Despite turnout estimated at more than 97%, opposition leaders in Ethiopia's Tigray region say they probably won't get the backing they hoped for in elections that Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government has called illegal. It was unclear whether opposition parties would actually gain seats in the regional parliament, known as the State Council, against Abiy's ruling, Tigray People's Liberation Front, which has dominated Tigrayan politics for decades. Hayalu Godfey, chairman of the opposition party, Salsay Wayane Tigray, told French news agency AFP that the TPLF will dominate the council and will probably get 98 to 99% of the seats. Ethiopia was supposed to hold national elections in August, but they were postponed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. The job losses in Kenya that resulted from the COVID-19 lockdown have also hurt Kenyan artists who are trying to find different ways to promote their craft and make a living. Some are using their art to spread health messages about the coronavirus, as Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
Can you see? Okay. Layers, many layers.
With a mobile phone in one hand and a charcoal brush in the other, master artist Patrick Mukabi performs a delicate balancing act as he goes about teaching an online art class. It is a unique experience for the artist who turned to virtual teaching at the onset of the COVID pandemic. But while the platform has advantages, Mukabi says it also has its drawbacks.
I like being with people. I get ideas from people. Not meeting my students. Not being able to get visitors to buy work, also walk in. People will just walk into the studio. So things just stop suddenly.
Mukabi is one of hundreds of artists affected by the coronavirus pandemic. His income has dropped by half to about $1,000 per month as a result of not being able to sell his art. The Trust for Indigenous Culture and Health, a non-profit organization based in Kenya, has launched an initiative to provide a platform for artists such as Mukabi to sell their works and promote COVID-19 health messages. The project has brought together 46 artists who created a mobile art installation in line with the theme. Eric Manyo is a curator at Tika. He spoke to VOA about the art installation.
Once we had put the installation together, reaching out to the malls, to the government, just to do a tour with the installation, became a bit tricky because they were not sure exactly what the installation was about. But once they saw the beauty of it, once they saw the message that was on it in terms of resilience, they both embraced it.
Visual artist Peterson Kamwadi is one of the artists involved in the project. He is putting the final touches on a piece he has been working on for more than a year. On average, one of his art pieces sells for $800. But because of the pandemic, most galleries remain closed, leaving Kamwadi without a space to show his works. So participating in the mobile art installation proved to be a boon.
It was an opportunity for artists to kind of come together and collaboratively create something that kind of depicts their presence and their continuity and what is out. It was also, I think, an opportunity to bring our work, you know, I think in a very grand way into the public space. And this kind of can also be seen with where this tapestry has actually been shown at.
The art installation is expected to be on display for at least another month, spreading its message of hope while promoting the works of the various artists involved. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.